Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Good to have you back. We're glad to be here on a scorching Sunday before the summer solstice. I hope you're finding a way to stay cool out there because it is a scorcher. A preview for many of you heathens of what it's going to be like in hell. Except a lot hotter. Quite a bit, as a matter of fact. Now, to begin, we have all had a chance now, a week now, to digest the aftermath and the fallout of the massacre at the Homo Bar in Orlando, Florida. And I have some thoughts that I want to share with you. But I want to start with bears. Bears. Watching the local news broadcast with my extremely attractive audio engineer the other night, there was the bear story. Every night on the local news, you'll have at least one dog story. And in Colorado, you'll usually have at least one bear story. And we wondered aloud to one another, who kills more people? Bears or homos? Now stop and think about that. You may find that politically incorrect, but I'm thinking if you were to able to run the numbers, and keeping in mind, of course, that we have laws against feeding the bears, because it builds an unhealthy appetite in the bears, so we have laws against feeding the bears. But now it seems as if it's mandatory to feed the egos of the mentally ill homosexualist activists out there who demand that they be named amongst the normal. And I would posit the idea that they cannot be named amongst the normal. I had some interesting discussions. I was shut down. I was at a wedding reception. I went to a wedding over this weekend out in Michigan, a young couple that I had actually introduced to one another. Invited them both to lunch, I think less than a year ago. And they got married, and it was awesome. It was fabulous. A great time was had by all, and the bride and groom appeared to be happier than I have ever seen two people ever. Aside from my extremely attractive audio engineer when I proposed to her. No, they had a more elaborate wedding than did we. But it wasn't overly elaborate. It wasn't. It was quite well done, I must say, and I'm extremely happy for the young couple. And it gives me hope for the future of Western civilization, that there are still straight young people marrying one another, marrying people of the opposite sex. It's good to see. But I got shut down by a couple of people. I had to change the subject at the wedding reception, on two occasions. Once when the subject of homos came up. And second, when the question of Alex Jones came up. I was pontificating, as I am wont to do. I was approached by an older gentleman. He came and he sat down, and he already knew who I was. And he said, I need to talk to you. I said, okay, what do you want to talk about? He said, I need to talk to you because you communicate with people, from what I understand. I said, I do. I do communicate with people. Well, here's a fellow, he's got to be 70 years old, and he says he's on Facebook every day just trying to convince people of creationism and against atheism and all of that stuff, evolution and that, all that. This is a 70-plus-year-old man, and he's fighting the good fight, and a wise man he was. He said, you know, I can't understand why people will not accept the idea that life cannot come from non-life. Life cannot come from non-living matter. Life cannot come from anything except life. Life is a continuum. So there had to be something living that created all the life we see around us in the universe. He says, I post these ideas. They seem completely rational and logical to me, but people will not hear them. And I said, you know. I said, you know, Carl, there comes a point with some people that they become unsalvageable. They're not salvageable. I said, it's even in the Bible. God turns them over to a debased mind, and it doesn't matter what kind of logical argument you make. They have become reprobate. They're not going to hear your logic. But it's better to present it to them than not to. So you're doing a good thing, but don't feel bad that you're not winning the debate with the high-handed atheist. They're reprobate. And the point the man makes is perfectly logical. Nowhere ever have scientists created life. They've never infused life into something not alive. And for the centuries that all the scientists have been trying, they have not done it. I have a story later in the broadcast how they found some organic material in space, and this points to life. Well, you know, the scientists can start with a complete body of any kind of animal or a person in the lab. They have every building block you need for life, and they cannot infuse that dead entity with life. It cannot be done. So, Carl, your logic follows, but they're reprobate. They're not going to hear you. Don't get depressed and keep fighting the good fight. It was great to meet him. Now, I met some other people. They were less amenable to my way of thinking. I had one woman who overheard my conversation with Carl, and she said, so, who do you listen to? I said, what do you mean, who do I listen to? She said, well, you seem like you're in the know. So, like, do you, like, listen to Alex Jones? And I said, no, I don't listen to Alex Jones. He's a nut. She said, what do you mean he's a nut? I said, well, he thinks George Bush was involved in the 9/11 attacks. Well, he was. I said, okay, we're going to change the subject. That young lady and I did not speak for the rest of the evening, as a matter of fact. And a delightful evening it was with mead. We were drinking mead. Have you ever drank mead? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Never drank mead? You would like it. Because it's sweet and fruity and bubbly and very light alcohol. I had never drank mead, nor was I aware of the history of mead, but drank a dry mead and a sweet mead at the wedding. There was no beer, there was no wine, there was only mead. And I thought mead was something that was drunk in the Middle Ages in big wooden cups, and apparently it was. Anyway, I don't want to get into the history of mead, but I do want to congratulate my wonderful friends on their wedding, and I'm glad that I could be involved peripherally in some way. I'm just thankful. Very thankful. Now, I'm going to get back to the fallout from the maniacal, homosexual, Islamist murderer down in Orlando. But first, let's go to the domestic tranquility file where we have... we have surveillance video. Apparently, this is from The Smoking Gun. Surveillance video is now online. It shows Misty Lee Wilkie intentionally slamming her car into her bicycle-riding boyfriend on a Phoenix street. She ran him over on purpose. When interviewed afterwards, she told police that she freaked out because she found out that her boyfriend was HIV positive. And so she ran over him with a car. So now not only is he HIV positive, he also has head trauma and a fractured vertebrae. He's in rough shape. The woman involved, she told the police that she had recently become involved in a sexual relationship with the HIV positive man lying in the road underneath her car and part of his bike. And this... Well, this goes back to the bears. I mean, we have laws against feeding the bears, but we don't have laws against fornication. Here's a woman just fornicating publicly with some guy. She recently entered into a sexual relationship, which probably means she met him a day or two, a few days. Who knows? But it's just open fornication. And fornication is criminal. Nobody wants to hear that. But it's criminal. It's criminal because it harms other people. Of course, it harms the two people involved. That goes without saying. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's criminal. That could be just a garden variety sin. But fornication is criminal because it harms other people. It harms the families of those involved. It harms society by flagrantly violating the institution of marriage in front of God and everybody. It harms children by exposing them to the knowledge of illicit behavior without shame. Children witnessing illicit behavior with no shame in public, that's harmful to children. And it used to be a crime. Oh, well, it still is a crime, but it used to be recognized as a crime in every municipality, in every state in the union. The punishment wasn't always appropriate. The punishment, of course, for fornication is you have to get married. And the idea is not to force fornicating people to get married. The idea is to let people understand the gravity of fornication. Because if a guy knew that if it was found out, if it was discovered that he was fornicating with a woman, that he would have to marry her, he would probably think twice about fornicating in the first place. And people wouldn't be getting run over by cars in Phoenix streets. It would save the police a lot of trouble with all the violence that's a direct result of both adultery and fornication, by the way. So there. Now, I'm going to go back to the Pulse nightclub. Well, I'm not going to go back. I've never been there. Never been to a homo. I've never been to a gay bar. I've been subject to many temptations in my life, but going to a gay bar to check out the scene never appealed to me in any way. I consider myself lucky, and I thank my parents for instilling in me the gag reflex against homosexuality. But down at the Pulse, we all know what was going on down there. I mean, let's not be coy about what happens at these bars. We know what these places are. And now, in light of this massacre, I've listened to the talkers, I've watched the news and heard the commentators, and it seems to me that as a direct result of this incident now, everyone who speaks publicly must now acknowledge the homosexuals along with all of the other people groups throughout history who have struggled and fought and won their freedom. Now the homosexuals have to be listed alongside the abolitionists, alongside the civil rights activists. Well, they don't even mention the pro-life activists. Pro-life activists must never be mentioned, but now the homosexualists must be mentioned. So let me get this straight. In our history, where we are right now, perverts hanging out at a gay bar on their way to popping ecstasy and hooking up in the bathroom are now the equivalent of Harriet Tubman. Is that what I'm supposed to? I'm sorry, no. I'm sorry, I will not acknowledge that they are the equivalent of all these other people who fought for their freedom. But that is the requirement now. And it doesn't matter if you're on iHeartRadio or Cumulus or ABC, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Is there anyone I missed? Salem Radio, all of you now must elevate the homosexualist to the level of the abolitionist, and you must never mention the unmentionables, the untouchables, those who have been active to try to restore the God-given right to life of every innocent child. Whether they've been born yet or not. They must never be mentioned, but the homosexualist must always be mentioned. And by the way, the Democrats are going after the guns angle, and the Republicans are going after the Islamic terror angle, and they're both missing the point. The Democrats on purpose, because every time someone is shot, they go for the guns. We know that. But the Republicans, they're just stupid. Because this is not just about terrorism, and it's certainly not about guns. So it's obvious it's not about guns. But It's not only radical Islam either. This is, in many respects, if you take out the Islamic part, this is another domestic detonation, a murder-suicide, amongst an epidemic of murder-suicides. And it's not just ISIS. I'm beginning to suspect that ISIS merely facilitates the ambition of sinful men to commit theft and murder. And that ISIS was a very convenient vehicle for an angry, self-loathing homosexual who hated what he had become and hated those people around him because of how they treat each other and what they do to each other. It's disgusting. And I can assure you of this, when the history is written in the great yonder, and we're all shown what's true and real and what actually happened, it will be made known that the owner of the Pulse nightclub, the woman who founded it in honor of her brother who died of AIDS, isn't that backwards and mentally deranged? Your brother enters into a lifestyle that literally kills him, and you open up a den of similar iniquity to honor him. Isn't that backwards? Isn't that criminally insane? Well, that's what she did. And I will wager that in the long run, the owner of the Pulse is responsible for more deaths than Omar, the ISIS homo. Welcome back. It's the Weekly Worldview. Good to have you. By the way, Barry Ho will be at the Pulse reopening when the club reopens. Now that he's had an opportunity to go down there, check out the cruising, get a feel for the lay of the land, he'll be back. That's my prediction. Now, I did predict that the one place you did not want to be when Barack Obama heard that there had been a massacre at a gay bar, you did not want to be between Barry Ho and Air Force One because you were going to get run over. He's heading down there faster than a speeding bullet, and indeed he did. He was there on Thursday, and my prediction is he will be back. That's what I predict. They will have a grand reopening, and it will be a massive celebration, and it will be the final codification of the homosexualist as the human rights activist. And from then on, we will all be required to worship and pay our respects and homage to Harriet Tubman, to Martin Luther King, and to Harvey Milk. And they'll probably pick at least one of the homosexuals who was slaughtered. It's just depressing to see that this is where it's going. But I do want to talk about radical Islam, because I've decided I'm not okay with that term. Radical Islamic terror. That's the one Sean Hannity has on his list. Sean Hannity has about 12 lists. He's got about 12 bullet point lists that he refers to incessantly. And he just lists the, and radical Islamic terror is one of his favorites. He's very upset that Barry Ho will not use the term radical Islamic terror or even radical Islam. But I'm not okay with radical Islam. I think radical Islam is giving too much due respect to Islam in general. I prefer the term Islamic terror. Because if you look at the Quran and you look at the history of Islam, this type of terror is in line with Islam. You don't have to be a radical to do jihad. That's all. So I prefer the term Islamic terror, and going forward, I will try to refrain from using the term radical Islam. And so there, Sean, you can get mad at me. I won't use your term either. And now before, should I, I'll do terrorism here for a second, because there's a great article that I do not have time on this show to do this entire article justice. I started underlining things, and the whole article was underlined, and it's got to be 1,000 words, 2,000 words probably. And but this is from the New York Post, an article disputing the fact that there's any such thing as the lone wolf terrorist. The Post reports some facts that are very interesting. You know, Barry Ho, he came out within hours of the massacre, basically calling Omar, the ISIS homo, just a lone actor. And shortly thereafter, Jay Johnson, the Secretary of Homeland Security, he said that Omar, let's see, he called him self-radicalized. He was self-radicalized without operational support from friends, family, or others. Now, we're going to get to this friends and family thing here in a minute. But the bottom line, they said he does not appear to have been part of any group. Okay. Well, I mean, he's a homosexual, so he's a part of that group. He's a Muslim, so he's a part of that group. But no, this Omar, the Islamic homo, the ISIS homo, he's the only man who actually is an island among us. That famous phrase, no man is an island, everyone except Omar, the homo. He's the only one who was an island, and he carried this out all on his own. The author goes on, and I can't get into it because it's just too much information, but he goes through the history of these so-called lone wolf actors. I will post this article so that you can link to it and read it for yourself, but there just is no such thing as a lone wolf terrorist, for crying out loud. If he's following the Islamic religion and listening to imams preaching about jihad, well, whether he officially joined their church and got the little card in the mail and said he's a member, that doesn't matter. We know who he's directed by. He's directed by Allah, a false god, and Allah's false prophets, from Muhammad right on down. Now, the interesting thing that this author pointed out that has shocked me all week, I've been struggling with this for a week now, the author points out that Omar's wife could face criminal charges. Oh, really? She could, huh? Why? Well, she told the FBI that she knew about her husband's plan to attack. Now, she drove him around. They cased a few places together, including Disney. And when I heard this, I believe it was on Tuesday last week, I asked, how has this person not been arrested? How can that be? She says she knew. You arrest her immediately. Are we not on a terror war footing any longer? I don't understand how she's not already in jail. And now prosecutors have convened a grand jury. A grand jury, they said. This is unbelievable to me. Now, I hope nothing like this happens, but if this woman participates in an attack while the grand jury is convened listening to evidence, well, then everyone involved will have blood on their hands. And I can't believe there's not a sheriff in Orlando or whatever county that's in who's not standing up and saying, how am I not being allowed to arrest this woman? She's obviously involved. And it's not like we've never known the wife of a terrorist to actually commit terrorism. It's happened before, people. Have we forgotten San Bernardino already? She already said she knew he was going to do something. That's not enough to arrest her? I can't believe it. But that's where we are. Completely confused. We're spending more time talking about where boys and girls should go to the bathroom, and that leaves us weak and open to terrorists and maniacs and homicidal homosexuals like this. Yeah. Yeah, God has removed his hedge of protection from us, but he didn't do it himself. We did it. God's hedge of protection is available. It's called the wisdom and the knowledge of following God. Reading the Bible, understanding what right and wrong is, and enforcing those things in a society. Well, we no longer do that, and so now we are exposed to the wiles of the maniacs and the deviants and the perverts and the murderers and their wives. Anyway, I'm calling for this woman to be arrested immediately. So there, I've done it. I've called for her to be arrested. But, oh, would it violate her rights? Perhaps. Perhaps that's a concern with you, that it would violate her rights. The fact that she told the police that she knew her husband was amassing weapons and ammunition and was going to do something, that right there is probable cause enough to hold this woman and to charge her with accessory to terrorism, murder, whatever. There's probably a half a dozen charges that could be brought, and this woman should be in custody because she's obviously part of a terrorist network of at least two people and maybe more. I mean, we don't know what we don't know, right? But nobody wants to, and I don't want to violate her rights, but when you know a crime is going to occur and you do not act and you do not report it, you have committed a crime and you forfeit your rights. By the way, let's talk about human rights, because that's become, apparently now, the act of dropping ecstasy and hooking up in a bathroom in the back of a gay bar, that's now a human right. And I disagree with that. And I'm okay with the term human rights, by the way. I prefer God-given rights, but I'm okay with human rights. You can use that phrase. Because we can declare them human rights, because typically it's man who is oppressing those whose human rights are being violated. And so we can settle this amongst ourselves, so to speak, without even necessarily bringing the higher power, the Almighty, the living God, into the argument, because men are typically oppressed by men. And so we can declare that there are human rights. But in doing so, we must declare that those rights are subordinate to the eternal, well-known laws of right and wrong. And you can attribute them to the living God. I do, because I know that's where they came from. But other people don't know, or they won't admit where they came from. But even they know what right and wrong is. And they know what appropriate human rights are. We have the right to life. We have the right to liberty. We have the right to property. We have the right to speak freely. We have the right to a free press. We have the right to assembly, peaceable assembly. We have the right to petition our governing officials for redress of grievances. These are basic human rights that are rooted in the Judeo-Christian history. But our rights, because they come from God, they are subordinate to God. And who is God? How do you find God? So if there's any atheists listening, I'm going to clue you in to how do you figure out who is God? Who is the real God? Is Allah God? Is Buddha a prophet of some type of God? Are the Hindu gods real? Who is the real God? Well, I'll tell you how you can find the true and living God. The true and living God is that spiritual entity that convicts you of your sin. The living God tells you when you have fallen short, when you have done wrong, when you have done harm. He speaks to you through your conscience. So the true God is the God who convicts you of sin. And the true God is also the God who offers a way for you to deal with your sin, to deal with your guilt, to find forgiveness and correction. That is the path to find the living God. Look for those two things. And you'll find that in the false pagan religions, there isn't much of that. There's virtually no conviction of sin in the Eastern pagan religions. And in Islam, there's virtually no hope for forgiveness aside from murdering other people, which I hope would strike you as illogical, nonsensical, criminal, and evil. But if you're searching for God, first, search your own conscience, because there is, even in the hardest atheist, that still small voice telling him when he is wrong. Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio today by my extremely attractive audio engineer, bringing you the news of the week. We go now to the Russian front. There's a Twitter account that belonged to an ISIS member this past week. It was hijacked by a hacker who claims to be waging an online campaign against ISIS, and here is how he's doing it. He says he's hacked over 250 Twitter accounts associated with ISIS and has replaced the content with pornography, gay pride messages, and homosexual pornography. So there's just no good guy here. I mean, you've got ISIS. Yes, they're an existential threat. But I would bet you that pornography is responsible for more violence and death in America than anyone in ISIS could ever hope to be. Pornography is involved. And so this guy is fighting ISIS with pornography, and somehow that gets reported as a positive effort. And it's not. This homo says he's received death threats from ISIS, and he identifies as part of a hacking collective known as Anonymous, which we're all familiar with. I had a feeling Anonymous was probably piled high with homos. And sure enough, there we have evidence of it. By the way, I'm very annoyed with Breitbart. And other conservatives have been getting on board lately. They're promoting this Greek homosexual conservative. I'm not going to mention his name because I don't want to give him any press. But he struts around with his bleach blonde gelled hair and spandex clothing and spouts off about libertarianism and conservatives, conservatism. And now I'm supposed to respect him equally with, say, Thomas Sowell, right? This Greek homo with the bleach blonde hair is now the equivalent of Clarence Thomas. Please, you people. I'm very annoyed with you people at Breitbart. All right, so I just wanted to get that off my chest. Now, let's go to the war file, because the war does continue in Afghanistan and elsewhere. According to the French press agency, the Taliban are using child sex slaves to mount insider attacks on police in southern Afghanistan. They are using young boys to exploit the practice of bachabazi. I've mentioned this before. Bachabazi is a long-standing tradition in the Islamic world, and specifically called this in Afghanistan, where grown men have pedophilic relationships with young boys. It's a pedophilic homosexuality is what it is, and it is accepted in their society. And they don't even consider the man who commits it a homosexual, let alone a child molester. This ancient custom, according to AFP, is prevalent across Afghanistan. Boys become objects of lustful attraction for powerful police commanders. By the way, these police commanders, these are our allies in Afghanistan against the Taliban. Well, the Taliban has been using young boys to mount a wave of Trojan horse attacks, at least six between January and April alone, that have killed hundreds of our allies, the Afghan policemen and police chiefs who molest boys. The Taliban seems to have figured out that these policemen, these allies of the West, have a weakness for young boys, and so they send the young boys in, gain the trust of the police chief, and then at some point the young boy detonates with either a machine gun or a bomb and kills as many police as possible. Well, these attacks have fueled deep mistrust within the ranks of the police in Afghanistan. How could you not have distrust already if your chief is a child molester? I'll tell you, it's amazing how hardened people's consciences can become when sexual perversion is institutionalized. A few generations later, you don't even realize that you're a homosexual child molester. Or I guess you're at least given enough social cover that you don't have to admit it, which is just horrifying. The report continues. One checkpoint commander's sex slave, a teenage boy, recently went on a shooting spree, killing seven policemen, including the commander who was molesting him as they slept. And AFP goes on to report that in conservative areas, women are mostly invisible in public and often unattainable due to steep bride prices. Well, there's also the polygamy. Polygamy, steep bride prices, and the fact that they dress their women in black burlap sacks. Now, what's conservative about that? The AFP says this is happening in conservative areas. This is happening in areas, in Afghanistan. But the urinalism schools have effectively brainwashed the urinalists to report anything that's evil, wicked, and bad is obviously being done by conservatives. So they call this conservative. I've never known a conservative who dressed his wife in a black burlap sack, had seven wives, and demanded $2 million to marry his daughter. I've not known one conservative to ever do that. But there you have it. So anyway, that's the excuse that the perverts in Afghanistan use. They say that these boys supplant the role of women. Many in Afghanistan see bachabazi neither as pedophilia nor homosexuality, which, of course, it's not, because those are forbidden in Islam. So here's another clue. If you're searching for the true and living God, if the religion that you are investigating posits the idea that you can hold completely conflicting ideas in your mind at the same time, and that you can commit acts that directly violate the conscience that you know you have in you, yet there's a workaround in the religion for that, that's a clue that that's a false religion and a false God, for those of you who are seeking. And I do hope there are some of you listening who are seeking. So they say pedophilia and homosexuality are forbidden in Islam unless, see, that's where the red flag should go up. As soon as you hear the unless you're a warlord and like that. All right. So it's amazing to me that a civilization can evolve in which people can become so removed from criminal, sinful behavior that they're allowed to act as if it's not just that. And that's what we have in Afghanistan with our allies, by the way. These are our allies. Yes, this practice of molesting boys by powerful men is seen widely as a cultural practice, and it's not a crime. It's not considered a crime. Well, in conservative areas, of course. Nothing conservative about that, Mr. AFP writer. This practice mostly occurs and is used by those in positions of power, warlords, commanders, and politicians. I'm sorry. If your civilization has devolved to that point, I would just as soon let you fight it out amongst each other. You people probably deserve the Taliban, you bunch of criminal bastards molesting young boys. All right. Now, Let's go to the politics file, where we will report on the impending collapse of the Hillary Clinton campaign. I hope desperately that that will occur. By the way, at the wedding, I had I announced my prediction that Hillary would not be the nominee. And I was told by the father of the bride that I was incorrect, that she would, in fact, be the president of the United States. He said, that's how bad it's gotten. You just don't want to admit it. And I admit that I'm probably grasping at straws, but I'm holding on to the belief that America has not devolved to the point that we will elect Hillary Clinton. I just can't believe it's true. Although my extremely attractive audio engineer says that it very well may be true. Have we made a bet on that yet? Let's make a bet. We'll make it in private, but we'll bet something of value. All right, now, let's report on Hillary. The Daily Caller reports that Hillary Rodham Clinton has recently harshly criticized three particular countries for directly funding terrorists. The governments are Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Qatar. Well, the unfortunate thing for Hillary is those three countries have contributed between $16 and $40 million to the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, of which Hillary is the keeper of the money box there. Yes. Now, Clinton says it's long past time for the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Kuwaitis, and others to stop their citizens from funding extremist organizations. That's what Hillary says. Hey, Hill, what about the abortionist, homosexualist Clinton Global Initiative? I consider that an extremist organization. Obviously, you're not killing people with bombs and guns in public or chopping off anyone's head. But what the Clinton Global Initiative supports and affects around the world is even more extreme because they kill more people. The Clinton Global Initiative, through its support for abortion, has killed more innocent people than the most rabid ISIS commander could ever hope to kill. So I think they should stop funding you, Hillary. Let's see. Well, before Hillary criticized these Middle Eastern countries, well, she thanked them. The Clinton Foundation's impact would not be possible without the generous support of our donors and grantors. Their generosity makes our work possible, and we thank them. And you heard crickets in the crowd. Anyway, the annual budget of the Clinton Global Initiative is over $200 million. And that's every year, by the way, for those of you who matriculated in the government schools. An annual budget is how much they spend every year. They spend over $200 million a year promoting first the financial interests of Bill and Hillary Clinton and quite possibly their daughter and their banker son-in-law. Second, they promote abortion, population control, they call it, and they promote the homosexualization of every corner of the world that they can get their grimy little paws into. All right, so they receive money. So she's a hypocrite. Big shock there. All right. As if I had to reiterate the obvious. Let's now go to the American Treason File. A story from the National Interest, nationalinterest.org, written by one Charles Kubik. This is about what Hillary did in Libya. And I had no idea that she was this direct involved, but here we go. February 17, 2011, you remember, was the Day of Rage, part of the Arab Spring when the Libyans rose up and demanded the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi, and they took up arms. And they went, and there began to be civil unrest. Well, before the revolution, Libya was prospering, according to Charles Kubik. They were also providing intelligence on terrorist activity post-September 11th. Gaddafi was no longer a threat. Yet, for some reason, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton strongly advocated and succeeded in convincing the Ho administration to support the Libyan rebels with a no-fly zone. That no-fly zone quickly turned into all-out war Within weeks, Mr. Kubik reports, within weeks of the revolution, there were valid ceasefire negotiations going on to effect Gaddafi's abdication. Mr. Kubik was involved personally in those negotiations. He was a business advisor. This is a retired rear admiral, by the way. Well, so Gaddafi had agreed he would step down. There were some conditions. Let's see, did they have those conditions here? Basically, he said he wanted free passage. He wanted his family to be allowed to leave the country. He wanted some money. And he wanted sanctions lifted against himself and his family. Well, those negotiations, so a peaceful a solution, says Kubik, was still possible without any bloodshed in Benghazi. However, on March 14, 2011, Secretary Clinton had already met with the rebel leaders in Paris and had committed to support their revolution. So despite these ceasefire opportunities to prevent bloodshed in Benghazi at the onset of hostilities, Secretary Clinton intervened and quickly pushed her foreign policy in support of a revolution led by the Muslim Brotherhood and known terrorists in the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. One of the Libyan rebel commanders, the brigade commanders that Clinton was supporting, was Ahmed Abu Katala, who would later be involved in the terrorist attack in Benghazi on September 11th, 2012. To which Hillary Clinton famously replied, "What difference at this point does it make?" Well, the revolution supposedly ended October 23rd, 2011. Since then, there's been a Democratic election in 2012, then there was another Democratic election in 2014, but Islamic elements have rejected the election results. There are now four entities competing for control in Libya, the secular, the government in exile, exiled to Tobruk, the radical Islamists governing out of Tripoli, and ISIS terrorists who control the city of Sirte. And then, of course, there's the unimposed government of National Accord. That's the UN, the unimposed government. The UN is attempting, apparently, with the U.S. and Europeans, to impose a unity government that will include elements of Sharia law. So the UN and Hillary Clinton and the not just a bungling, but a treasonous miscalculation, a treasonous calculation in favor of the enemies of all that is good and right in the Western world. Clinton is part and parcel to it. She's got blood on her hands. She's got blood up to her knees. And you're telling me she's going to be the next president? You had to go with one of those sexually ambiguous 80s pop groups with that voice. What was that all about? Slip that in. Ew. That song gave me the creeps in the 80s. I was never into what we called that pop or new wave. And it was so obviously homosexual that red-blooded American boys like me, we weren't into any of that stuff. Not that we were into anything all that good, but please. Now, from the Feel the Burn file, Venezuelans have reverted to bartering for everything that you could possibly think of, from diapers to feminine napkins to rice and grain. They're using social media to post things like, "I have diapers. I will exchange them for a kilo of pasta." This is the socialist paradise down in Venezuela. One woman says of the social media environment in Venezuela, she says, we've forgotten what it's like to chat about other matters. All we talk about is how to get hold of food, toiletries, and medicine. She says people are bartering like this all around the country. The Global Post reports that Venezuela's economy has plunged in line with the price of crude oil exports, inflation, and the devaluation of its currency. Never once mentioning that they're a bunch of socialists. That's not to be mentioned. That's verboten. You cannot say that. It is estimated right now that 80% of food goods are in short supply in Venezuela. Looting and riots have surged in recent weeks, with several people being killed just in the past few days in food riots. So now that Bernie Sanders can no longer clinch the Democrat nomination, I suggest he be exiled, along with his supporters, to Venezuela. Surely they could feel the burn down there. They're feeling it right now, as a matter of fact. So that's where Bernie should be dispatched to, with extreme prejudice. Speaking of extreme prejudice, I have a story about Ellen DeGeneres. Disney's Pixar is producing a new film. This is the sequel to Finding Nemo. Yeah, Finding Dory is the name of it. Now, here's the thing, folks. My little kids, they liked Finding Nemo. They watched that movie. They didn't like it that much. Oh, okay. Well, they did watch it, though. All right. And this is why Disney is such a diabolical criminal institution, because they set, along with so many other things they've done in the past 20 years or so, they put out something wholesome and fun and delightful, like Miley Cyrus, for example, yeah, or Finding Nemo. And then, within a short period of time, everything is perverted and degenerated, because Ellen DeGeneres says there's going to be a transgendered stingray in the new Finding Dory movie. Yes. A representative for Pixar did not immediately confirm what Ellen DeGeneres said in a USA Today interview, meaning that Ellen was probably not just making this up. This was a part of the official promotional effort on behalf of Disney. Breitbart and their semi-moronic reporters, they say some fans have lobbied Disney to include LGBT characters in its films. Well, who cares? Do normal people care if degenerates want to see degeneracy on film? For crying out loud, Disney made their fortune entertaining families, and they are going to sacrifice it all. Unless, of course, the family can be corrupted and perverted to the point that people don't even recognize this as corrupt and vulgar and foul anymore, which could very well be on its way. They talk about social media campaigns. I don't want to even talk about this. A movie, Frozen. Have our kids seen Frozen? Yeah, they've seen Frozen. They don't care about it. That's good, because they want a lesbian on Frozen. This year, an episode of ABC's, that's a Disney product, ABC's drama Once Upon a Time featured a lesbian kiss between some woman in The Wizard of Oz and Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. Just go ahead, Disney. Just keep pushing it, right? What could they possibly hope to gain? I think that it's no longer a matter of financial interest. I think that they are a bunch of perverts. There's a lot of homosexuals and perverts at Disney. That's what's happening. And folks, teaching children perverted sexuality is a crime. In my opinion, it is a capital crime. Yes, what Disney is doing, should they be arrested, tried, and convicted, the executives, the writers, and the producers should be executed for doing this. What's Jesus' opinion? What would Jesus do, you may ask? Because, Doug, you sound awfully harsh. Isn't Jesus forgiving and wonderful and nice? And doesn't he love everybody, even the gays? Jesus said in Matthew 18, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depths of the sea. That's all the way down. That's from Jesus. And you notice what he said there. He said, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me See, he already knows they believe in him. Innocent little children, they know God. They are not at odds with their conscience yet. And so they know what's right and wrong, and they know who God is, and they have something of a relationship with him. And for you to come and steal that from God, for you to murder that child's opportunity to have an eternity in paradise with the living God, that is a capital crime. And these people at Disney are utter criminals. And I hope one day a government is instituted with righteous men who recognize this type of criminality and punish it appropriately. Notice I'm not calling for anyone to be killed. I don't want anyone's head chopped off. I wouldn't mind some of these people being fired and run out of town on a rail and put to shame so they could never be in this business again. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't mind that. But I'm not calling for any of them to be killed without due process of law. Thank you very much. Well, the Satanists are now aligned with Planned Parenthood. What do you mean now aligned? They've always been aligned. Satan, what is it about Satanists? They're all pro-aborts. The Satanic Temple, they call themselves a non-theistic religious organization. They're staging satanic counter-protests at anti-abortion rallies. Oh, we'll see how long that lasts. And now they're, one of the Satanist leaders, she's blogging about her actual abortion. She says, I don't really want to say what she says because I don't care what she says. But she is going through the process of having an abortion, and she's blogging about it and having some fun with it. Uh-huh. I really don't want to report on that. It's just disgusting. Let's go to the justice file to just get a... Let's take the temperature of the state of justice in America, circa 2016. Emergency room doctors back in April examined a 5-year-old rape victim. I'm sorry, this was July of 2014. They determined that it was clear that the child had been raped. This is a 5-year-old. They also detected a sexually transmitted disease, the same disease the suspect had. And this made it clear to investigators that the child had been raped at least once before the July 2014 rape. So the Solicitor General for the 8th Judicial Court, the 8th Judicial Circuit in Greenville, South Carolina, has handed down a 20-year sentence for a man who raped a 5-year-old. And then this Solicitor General, that's a judge, he went on to say, "We will fight for our kids as long as I'm in this office to put sick predators like this where they belong, behind bars." Really, Your Honor? Behind bars? Is that where someone who rapes a 5-year-old child belongs? Okay, you're no longer qualified to be on the bench. He should be removed. He should be removed by the governor or a vote of the people somehow. This guy is not qualified. If you rape a 5-year-old child, there's one place you belong, and that is 6 feet under. And we will register you so that we know where you are at all times and that you cannot harm other people. Am I insane? Is it me who's insane who thinks that if you rape a 5-year-old, you should be put to death painfully, swiftly, with extreme prejudice? Maybe I'm insane? I don't think so. I think if you think a 20-year sentence is appropriate for that, I think you're insane. All right, now let's go to the domestic tranquility file. We'll take the temperature of the state of domestic tranquility in America. The domestic tranquility, by the way, was codified in our founding documents that the government had an obligation to ensure domestic tranquility. Well, in Roswell, New Mexico, Juan David Villegas Hernandez was taken into custody by Sonora State Police last Sunday, a day after police in Roswell, New Mexico, said the 34-year-old shot and killed his wife, Cynthia Villegas, and their 4 daughters, age 14, 11, 7, and 3. Court documents indicate that the wife was seeking a divorce. And since murder and suicide are viable options in today's society, those were the options that David Villegas Hernandez opted for. he decided to commit murder. And he was going to commit suicide, but the police, for some reason, negotiated with him and arrested him, which is unfortunate. It would have been better to carry out justice in the Sonoran Desert for this particular fellow, but we will have him with us for many decades to come. Meanwhile, more from the domestic tranquility front. Two North Florida parents are facing charges after authorities say their two-year-old son died from eating a morphine pill. Yes, mom and dad bought some morphine pills from a co-worker, but when they got home, they realized they had dropped one. Well, they searched and searched and searched, and they believed that their son had found it. So they decided to smoke some marijuana, drink alcohol, and go to sleep after taking the other morphine pill. They woke up the next morning and found their child dead. And they have been charged with something less than, aggravated child neglect. Where's the murder charge or the manslaughter charge? I'm looking. I don't see murder or manslaughter. Oh, the charges may be updated, though. They could get very creative with those. Now, do I want to do the culture file? Yeah, the culture file. This is it. This is the last one. This is a See I Told You So from 25 years ago. My pastor told a similar story. A new study published this month by the National Bureau of Economic Research shows clear evidence that access to condoms in schools leads to an increase in teen fertility. Yes, condom giveaways began in the 90s as a response to AIDS. And districts all over the country followed the lead of New York and L.A., and they handed out rubbers to all the girls in school and all the boys. And, well, it turns out that more and more teenagers kept getting more and more pregnant and continue to do so. And so the obvious solution for the liberals is to now give them abortion pills. And the researchers argue that the pregnancy went up mostly where condoms were distributed without counseling. So it was the problem with the counseling, yeah. You know what kind of counseling these kids need when it comes to sex? They need the Bible, and they need someone to read it to them and to tell them what sex is really for and what it's all about and what it should not be used for. That's the only kind of counseling that would work, and then you wouldn't have to hand out the rubbers. So, and then you put liberals out of work so that they're not going to do that. And plus, they have an insatiable desire to corrupt children. Which I hate that. I hate that more than anything, and I think God hates that more than anything. You should hate that more than anything. But let's end on a note of love, because I just came from a wedding where two young people who love the Lord got married. And if they love the Lord, I know they can love each other. And I look forward to seeing what happens with them so that I can somehow temper all the vitriol that builds up in me every day reading the news by watching a young Christian family blossom and grow and provide blessings for everyone around them. That's it. That's the Weekly Worldview this week, folks. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course my other brother Darrow, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.